Imagine this. Your thoughts, your beliefs, your feelings. This is your house. But is it your home? Hi, I'm Nelson DeMello, and join me as we try to find our home beyond our borders.
I don't know. I think that's fine.
Yeah, that's a good take.
What's up, guys? I didn't know what I was going to say for a while, and it was because comments, bro. So it's a weird thing, man, because I know, like, I've already prepared myself, you know, like, don't let the comments get to you, don't read the comments, whatever the case is, you know, well, like, right now, like, I'm okay with reading the comments because I want to interact, and I want to stir the pot, and whatever the case is, and I know even that they're misunderstanding me a lot of the point, and, like, I did it intentionally, so I'm almost being, like, devil's advocate sometimes, but there's just, like, that feeling of, like, so that's the weird thing, is I don't mean to be stoic. Like, I don't feel the rejection or the pain, you know, I don't feel any of that. It's just me struggling with coming up with something made me realize that it's messing with my psyche. It's messing with my mind, you know, like, it's giving me, like, creator's block because I'm hesitant now, you know. And that is one thing, one aspect that I was really thinking about, because, like, being stable and, like, emotionally stable is pretty important to me. And, like, I think it's a good thing, and I thank God for it. You know, I like, yeah, because I used to catastrophize. What that means is if, I don't know, if someone, like, any little thing, you would think of the worst possible scenario and imagine that to be true. And that gives you the anxiety and the, you know, it's like, I don't know, you're walking by a friend, like, past a friend, and you say hi and they don't say hi. And you're like, oh my God, did I do something? Oh my God, maybe he found out that I just took his baseball card or his candy or whatever, like, you know, and you just spiral into this, the worst thing that could have happened just happened, when maybe they just didn't see you, or, you know, they were focused on whatever, or, you know, whatever the case is. So that, I used to do that a lot. I also, yeah, it's just unstable, you know, very emotional. I've had to learn to, like, not take my first, like, feelings seriously, you know, but at the expense of that, I feel like I've gone to the other pendulum where now I'm stoic and I don't feel things when I should. And I know that because of things like this, like, I don't feel emotionally affected by things, but I see how it's affecting my life in these subtle ways of creator's block or hesitancy of getting back in front of a microphone or whatever the case is. And so it's like me having to be extra sensitive to how I'm reacting to things. And if it's not an emotional reaction, which, not that I miss, but, like, it wouldn't be bad. Like, it'd be easier to spot, right? If I was, like, emotionally upset by it, but I don't know. That's such a weird thing, because it's like when you see, like, a manly man who doesn't show emotion or whatever, and they say, like, when something obviously should affect them and it doesn't affect them, you're thinking, ah, you just shoved it down or whatever. But I think we've just somehow created two things. I don't know. An inability to recognize it anymore, or anytime an inkling of that feeling bubbles up, it numbs itself. Because it's this weird thing of, like, well, now that I'm talking about it more, it almost feels like it wants to come out. So I mean, there's that. That's interesting. And then the other aspect of it is me just thinking, like, man, is it all worth it? And this makes me meditate on, well, I mean, a few things, like, throughout the Bible, there's been people on the right and wrong side of what God is trying to do, right? I think of Acts 5, for one, with, when the Sanhedrin gets together and the high priest, and then some guy, I forget, it's not saying here, but it's Acts 5:39, he says, but it is from God. He's basically saying, like, movements come and go, and usually when you kill the leader of the movement, they all spread out and, you know, go find some other, like, vermin hole to congregate in. And so if this Jesus person is just one of those people, then that's what's going to happen. And then here he starts saying, but if it is from God, you will not be able to stop these men. You will only find yourself fighting against God. And so that's something I consider, like, on both ends, right? Being the one persecuting, you know, false prophets and, you know, like, false teachers and all that. But then on the other end of being that false prophet, false teacher, and, like, just seeing that's such, just a weird, like, dynamic, being both. Because truth is important. I mean, if I can go back just a little bit, when we're talking about, like, opinions, right? Like, I don't know if people know how to have discussions anymore because they assume that anyone in front of a camera is coming from a place of, I'm speaking 100% fact, and they're in fight me if you don't agree, right? Where, I mean, yeah, sure, most people, I think there's a lot of people, especially in this area of YouTube that will, or whatever area of talking, that read things, regurgitate, and act like it's true because they haven't seen all possible sides to this. But even so, I was listening to Alex O'Connor talk about the preface paradox. This idea of, like, you know, usually in the preface, an author will say, like, hey, I might have made a mistake or whatever. But he's gone through the whole book, you know, line by line. And he's like, nope, no mistake, no mistake, no mistake, no mistake, no mistake. And then you go on, it's like, there might be something in there, but I didn't catch it, you know. Where he, like, expands that into, like, belief. And there's, like, this humility of saying, like, ah, all of my ideas, they're, like, there has to be something that I believe that's false. Like, you know, it has to be the case because I can't be right about everything. But if we were to go line by line in everything we believe, we wouldn't disagree with anything, right? So it's almost this weird humility take that we have to, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a lack of inconsideration. And what I mean by that, or a lack of consideration. So, like, maybe we believe line by line everything we believe, but in something that we believe, maybe we haven't considered other things that may be more true. I don't know. But yeah, it's a paradox, but it's not a paradox. Because, again, humility, I guess. But anyways, yeah. So my point is, like, I don't even think I speak in that rough tone of this is what's right. I obviously, what I say, I believe. But even in what I say, I kind of leave things open-ended. Except for, I don't know, fundamental things or things that I feel strongly. I have a friend named... you almost got me. I'm out here telling private names. Nope. But he says, strong opinions loosely held. I like that. I have strong opinions, obviously. Like, you're not going to have, if you're opinionated, you're going to believe, your opinions are what you believe is true. You're not going to hold a wrong opinion on purpose. Right. And that just kind of goes, you know, across the spectrum. Even for people who do believe wrong things, they don't know it's wrong. They've come to the conclusion that it's right. So there has to be a way, which, I mean, I understand the way, at least a way for me, at least it would be start at the same starting point with them and go in a different direction. to me, that's the right way to do it. I think people honestly aren't sophisticated and intelligent enough to do that. Not saying that I'm like uber smart, but if you understand where they're coming from, like there's a level of intelligence, a level of empathy that you need to have to understand why someone's wrong, to show them how to be right, how to lead them to right. There are people who are stubborn. And of course, some ideas are had because it benefits them the most. I understand that. But if you are honest and earnest about getting to the truth, then that's a conversation that we can have. You know, that's a conversation of, hey, okay, you believe this. Why? Oh, because of this, this, and this. Why? Because of this, this, this. Why? Because of this. Ah, I agree with this, but how did you get from here to here? What if you go from here to there? You know what I mean? I don't know. I feel like conversations are weird, man. Like when you're listening, maybe you're keeping up with this or whatever. If you're watching, probably even better. But yeah, I just don't have an example. You know what? Let's use Hyper Grace for an example. You're like, I believe that grace, wherever sin abounds, grace abounds the more. Okay, why do you believe that? Well, because it's in the Bible. Okay. You would say then, well, what are other verses that speak to that? And then maybe they'll give, you know, here and there, like, now therefore there is no condemnation, da, da, da. Cool. And then you say, okay, well, you believe in the Bible? Cool. What about these verses here where it says to, you know, submit your flesh, die to your flesh, crucify yourself, you know, da, 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 da. And then let's see where they go. And then you say, well, okay, how about this better balance between the two ideas, you know, which is that grace abounds, propels you to a place where you can sin no more. And that's even that is simplified, right? But this idea that you have to connect ideas, right? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes when I'm listening to people talk, especially about the Bible and Jesus, and they say something that I think is blatantly wrong, I do feel like, you know, doing the gotcha thing, but it's just this anger. But then that goes into, okay, and this is the irony, right? It's like, I'm in the business of, there's like this Venn diagram, I think, of Christians and atheists. And the middle term, like that, I want to get to the line, right? The line is what? It's Christians who don't look like Christ, who don't talk like Christ, think like Christ, love like Christ, that don't, that aren't slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to anger, right? That don't walk in wisdom, fruits of the Spirit. I want to get to those and cut them off. And I want to get to the Christians or the atheists who not even cut the, I don't mean to cut them off like you're excommunicated. It's like, hey, this is where you stand. Do you actually believe what you believe? Or is this something that has just been passed down to you? Or is this a moral high ground for you? You know, what is it that makes you hold on to the title of Christian, but not carry the identity of Christian? Why is there a disconnect there? And with those people, I want to be stern and rough. With the atheists, I think there's a lot of atheists who see the love of God, are attracted to the love of God. They are attracted to God's handiwork. They're attracted to God. But because they were raised and taught that God was this white man who like freaking hulks down lightning and destroys you know, Sodom and Gomorrah and this and that. Like they just have the wrong perspective of God. They look at this thing and say, ah, spirituality, but it's not God. It's not Christian God. It's not Yahweh, right? And that's a disconnect. And so that, you know, like that's the Venn diagram. It's like Christians who aren't Christians who think they're Christians, and then atheists who think they're atheists, but they're more Christian than these fake Christians. You know what I mean? So I just kind of want to switch them over. Like that makes no sense, you know? And I think that comes with really defining things, making things clear. I'm in the business of making the subjective objective. That is essentially my job right now. And how to make the subjective objective is by asking specific yes or no questions. So, for example, let's say you have 50 shades of purple, and you have to decide whether it's more blue or more red. There's different ways to do that. You can take the content of the purple and decide whether there's more purple or more red, and then that's one way. And that's, I have just made that objective. You can look at it and be like, this feels more blue. This feels more red of a purple. I don't know. But, and then just kind of subjectively do it by, you know, whatever. Or you can put a metric, an arbitrary metric, sure. And say, okay, if this purple has the majority red over the blue, then it's red. It's a red purple. And then this is a blue purple, right? I guess that would make it simple if you were to do it that way. But I imagine things more complicated things that are subjective, but you try to find metrics like that. You try to find yes or no questions to make it objective and make it clear. Doing that with theology. I feel like a huge part of philosophy and theology is trying to get definitions and say, okay, these are the definitions for Christianity. Do you believe in them? Like that's what creeds are essentially, right? You say, do you believe in them? Yes or no? And if you say no, then you're not a Christian, right? If the creed is believe in the Trinity, believe Jesus died for our sins, believe you're atoned, you know, all of that. Do you believe in all these things? No, I believe in three of the five. You're not a Christian. Like, I don't know. Let's say I like soccer. Okay, do you have a favorite team? Do you play? Do you watch? Do you play? Do you watch? Do you have a favorite team? Do you cheer for a team? You know, whatever. If you answer no to all of those questions, I think objectively, you don't like soccer. If you said, oh, but I do, and you can't tell me, you're absolutely right. But based on the definitions I've provided, which I think we can all agree, these are the this would describe someone who enjoys soccer. You don't like soccer. You might like the idea of soccer. Cool. But do you like soccer? You know, are you actively pursuing your desire of soccer? No? Well then, yeah, no. Again, all opinion-based, kind of, but if we can have consensus, then that becomes the norm, right? So that's one aspect.
Wait, hold up. If at any point in this you said, dang, I never thought about it like that, please subscribe. What are you doing, man? I'm trying to pay my bills. Okay, anyways, let's get back to the serious stuff. All right, see ya.
The second aspect that I wanted to talk about is knowing your purpose. This is best expressed, I think, in two things. John 2, he does the miracle in Canaan, right? The wedding. And then he flips some tables in the second half. At the end, I'm going to read John 2, 23 and 24. It says, "Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs they were doing, or that he was doing. But Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people." I'm going to read 25. And needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man. I think hype men and haters come and go, and all you're stuck with is what you're doing with your life. I want to look at John 6 as well, when Jesus feeds the 5,000. You know, he finishes teaching them. It's like a 3 days journey to the nearest town. He's like, we got to feed them. So he feeds 5,000 people. And then after all of that, right, here's verse 14. He says, "When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, 'This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world.'" Verse 15. "Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew himself again to the mountain by himself." Later on, so the next day, right? This is what's great. I'm just going to read it. This is insane. So he feeds 5,000 minimum, right? This is 5,000 men. So there was family members, there's kids, wives, all that, right? He feeds, let's say, 10,000 plus people. They try to force him to be king. He escapes. He goes into the mountain. The next day, and then he's like walking on water, that whole bit, right? Verse 22. "On the next day, the crowd that remained on the other side of the sea saw that there had been only one boat there, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with the disciples, but that his disciples had gone away alone. Other boats from Tiberias came near the place where they had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. So when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the boat and went to Capernaum, seeking Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, 'Rabbi, when did you come here?' 'Truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. For on him God the Father has set his seal.'" God, this breaks my heart every time. "Then they say, 'What must we do to be doing the works of God?' Jesus answered them, 'This is the work of God, that you believe in him who sent, in whom he has sent.' So they said to him, 'Then what signs do you do that we may see and believe you? What works do you perform?' 'Our father ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat.' Jesus then said to them, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave the bread from heaven, but my father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world.' They said to him, 'Sir, give us this bread always.' Jesus said to them, 'I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. But I say to you, you have seen me, and yet you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never cast out. For I have come down to heaven from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing of all that he has given me, but raise it up on the last day. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him should have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day.' So the Jews grumbled about him because he said, 'I am the bread that comes down from heaven.' They said, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? And then he keeps going and going and going. And he says that you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And then when they heard this, okay, so I'm verse 61 at the end to 62. Do you take offense at this? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending? Yep, yep, yep. Verse 66. After this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. Ugh, man. Sorry, that was a lot of reading, I know. But it's crazy. They wanted to make him king. He left. Jesus straight up said, you don't want me to be king because you saw the signs. You ate your fill. And he said, yeah, but if you're the Son of God, then like give us manna. Like give us food that we're never hungry. And he's like, I am the food that will never make you hungry. And he's like, you're done, right? My takeaway in that is what we do for, I mean, this goes both ways, right? This is like the worst atrocities probably came from this idea, but the greatest things came from this idea as well, which is, we don't do for man, we do with purpose. We do because we know this is what we're born for. We know we do this because this is, I don't know, destiny or something. I don't, maybe not, but it's just this assurance that this thing, that this idea that you have needs to be done regardless of who accepts. Is that dangerous to say? Yeah, I think so, actually, you know. But greatness is dangerous in any direction we go in. I mean, yeah, for me, I have to hold on to that because I know why I'm doing it. And I think maybe that's the more digestible way to say it. You just got to know your why. And if you know your why, then people that don't like it or people that do like it won't affect you, because that's not why we're doing it. We don't do it for the people. Like, we hope that it blesses people and we hope that things can move and things can change. But we're doing it because it needs to be done. We're saying it because it needs to be said, and not because we want to itch someone's ear. You know, I mean, you gotta, I mean, that could be the price, you know? So y'all think about that a little bit. Y'all have a great day. God bless, man. I pray for courage. I pray for kindness and boldness and gentleness as we pursue fully strengthened to do this, our mission.
Hey guys, thank you so much for going on this journey with me. If you like the content, please like, subscribe, follow, and remember, there is more to life, and that is good news. Thank you guys so much. Have a great day.